Before we begin, we want to acknowledge in the podcast this quarter, we tackle the Russian-Ukrainian war, which has been cited as the greatest negative shock to the international order since the Second World War. Democracies across the globe have rightly condemned Russia's invasion. Our hearts go out to those in Ukraine affected by the war. Significant sanctions are in place and worldwide aid is flowing into Ukraine. We can only hope this situation is resolved quickly. All right, welcome to the quarterly Kir Marbach podcast. For this quarter's show, we will first have Kir Marbach's Chief Investment Officer, Mark Foster, walk us through how the Ukrainian-Russian war has affected global economies and the financial markets, as well as a brief review of this past quarter. Mark, glad to have you back.
Good to be here.
After Mark's market updates, we will wrap up the show with a question we are hearing most often from clients today. What options are there for excess cash in the bank earning very little interest? An issue becoming more and more common with rising inflation. So let's dive in. To start, as we think about the Russian-Ukrainian war, how important are the Russian and Ukrainian economies, Mark?
In short, not very. In terms of landmass in Europe, Russia and Ukraine are ranked number one and two. But Russia contributes only 1.7% and Ukraine 0.2% of global GDP. So a very small contribution to global output. European exports to the two countries are less than 1% of Europe's GDP, and U.S. exports into the two countries are even less. So the direct impact of a Russia economic collapse would be very small. However, both Russia and Ukraine are significant commodity exporters, and we have seen a rise in the price of many of those export products, specifically oil, gas, and wheat. This is really the most important impact.
What about the impact to financial markets?
Well, we've gone back and looked at similar events in history, and there have been quite a few. Going back to 1940 when Germany invaded France, the Pearl Harbor attacks, Cuban Missile Crisis, Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, the World Trade Center bombings. Pretty consistently, the initial response is that the market goes down, which isn't very surprising. Then markets begin to differentiate. Events that led the U.S. into recession obviously had a more negative impact on the market 6 to 12 months out. However, those events that didn't lead to a recession actually produced pretty positive numbers 6 to 12 months later. I think that will end up being the key determinant. Ultimately, economic growth, and more specifically corporate profits, tend to be the drivers of markets. These are more affected by fiscal and monetary policy than by regional wars.
To that point, with inflation high and rates low, there is a lot of focus on how the Federal Reserve and other central banks will react. How will the war impact the Federal Reserve and other central banks?
Well, the lesson from history is that financial events tend to have much bigger impacts on markets than geopolitical events. Therefore, we think investors should be more concerned with what's going on at the Federal Reserve than what's happening in Europe. With inflation at a 40-year high in the U.S., the Fed is about to start its interest rate hiking cycle. Frankly, the Fed's in a bit of a box. They've waited too long to begin normalizing monetary policy. They repeatedly stuck to the narrative that inflation was transitory, even when it was clear to most that this was wrong. Frankly, in my 40-plus years of following financial markets, this is one of the worst errors they have ever made, and it's severely damaged their credibility. And inflation, which has trended significantly higher over the last 12 months, will now have additional upward bias given the continued run-up in energy prices due to the war. So their task is to raise rates to slow inflation without pushing the economy into a recession. I wish I had more confidence in the Fed's ability to pull this off, but past monetary mistakes don't provide a lot of comfort. And let's not put all this on the Fed, as fiscal policy hasn't helped either. $6 trillion of additional government spending, yeah, that's a huge, huge number. And all this money just adds to the inflation problem. Just look at retail sales. From January 2020 to April 2021, a 15-month period that begins prior to COVID, retail sales have increased more than the previous 5 years combined, as all the stimulus checks and PPP and all of that were spent. Add in some additional supply chain issues, and you have the worst inflation we have seen in quite some time.
As you indicated earlier, a key to equity markets is whether the geopolitical event, in this case, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, leads to a recession. You want to take a stab at that one?
Sure. The war by itself isn't really enough to send us into recession. That's not to minimize the suffering and loss of life, but this doesn't really impact the U.S. economy to any large degree. The issue is all the other things taking place. China is experiencing another lockdown. Europe will deal with an energy shock. The U.S. has the highest inflation in 40 years, consumer confidence dropping dramatically, tight labor markets, and the Federal Reserve starting their tightening cycle. On the other hand, consumer and corporate balance sheets are in great shape, corporate profits are doing well, and the managements we talk with are pretty optimistic. So I would guess we'll see a significant slowdown, but still positive economic growth. But it's one of those periods where you have to pay attention to the data and the trends. For example, Restoration Hardware, which is a company we don't own, came out last week and said they started to see significant weakness in their business beginning 3 or 4 weeks ago. Some truckers have mentioned some recent softening. On the other hand, Carnival Cruise Lines, another name that we don't own, just said they had the best one-week booking period in their history, and it was better by over 10%. With the COVID stats improving, people clearly want to travel and make up for lost ground. But consumer confidence has weakened dramatically as well. It's now very close to where it was at the bottom of 2008, so clearly people aren't feeling better off. That's likely the result of prices at the pump, inflation in general, the war. It's a long list. The point is there are lots of cross currents and a high degree of uncertainty in the markets currently.
Well, to piggyback on that point, outside of the war, the big takeaway was the market fluctuations last quarter. Can you just give us a quick review of quarter one?
Yeah, it was a roller coaster ride in the quarter. The S&P finished down 4% for the period, but at one point was down 13%. The growth and technology-heavy NASDAQ index was down 20% at one point and finished down 9% for the quarter. It's very unusual to see a 10% move in the quarter, but we just saw two. Down and back up. It just highlights the volatility and uncertainty. Oil prices were up 35% and bonds were down close to 5%. This is one of the worst quarters for bonds in quite some time as markets adjusted to the Federal Reserve pivot to higher rates. Unfortunately, it appears the volatility is here to stay and 2022 will prove to be a more challenging year.
Thanks for the summary, Mark. The Russian-Ukrainian war has been the forefront on the news each night, and we never want to downplay the atrocities that come with war, but I think you helped give a better understanding of how it impacts us financially. As we look ahead, it sounds like we will be paying close attention to how the Fed manages interest rates and inflation for the rest of the year. I will be interested to hear your updates next quarter. Now we're going to shift gears a little bit and focus on an issue we are hearing more and more about. One of the most common questions we hear from clients is what to do with excess cash in the bank savings accounts that is just sitting there not earning anything. They want to maintain the similar security of having cash in the bank, but with such minimal rates of return, are there any other options? And that question has come into focus even more with now two forces at play causing that idle cash to feel like it is just sitting there. First, as Mark touched on earlier, inflation is at a 40-year high. And second, the strong prospects of interest rates rising in the near future. For example, if I had $100,000 in my savings account, I would project it to need to return about $6,416 in 2022 to keep up with current inflation projections for the year. However, at current annual yields of 0.7%, I would receive, you guessed it, $70 from the bank, which obviously isn't even close to the $6,000 plus we just said we needed. At the same time, banks will often delay rising interest rates on their savings accounts versus their loan rates to help their net interest margin. So even if we see loan rates increase, we probably won't see savings rates increase anytime soon. To help compound the issue of idle cash is the outlook of interest rates rising. There is very little incentive for an investor to use that idle cash on hand to lock in yields on many interest-paying fixed income products because as rates rise, the market value of those lower-yielding investment products will decline, causing a drop in the overall investment return. It makes sense if you think about it. Let's assume I could purchase a bond from a company paying 3% yield today for $100. And next year, that exact same company is offering the exact same terms except for a 5% yield for the same bond for $100. The bond I purchased last year at 3% isn't worth $100 anymore. Why? Because I can use that same $100 now to buy a 5% yielding bond. So what's the answer to that problem I just over-explained? Let's review two commonly overlooked savings products for investors that allow for a better return than conventional bank products while maintaining a similar minimal risk profile and dive into the benefits and drawbacks to both. In addition, I will discuss an investment allocation strategy designed to combat rising inflation and rising rates. So the first product we'll talk about is brokered CDs. Not to be confused with conventional bank CDs, brokered CDs are similar in that they have a set yield and maturity just like a conventional bank CD. The main difference is that a brokered CD can be purchased on the open market, which allows an investor to sell before maturity and avoid an early termination fees that usually come with conventional bank CDs before maturity. The plus side of brokered CDs is that they oftentimes have a higher interest rate yield than conventional bank CDs because of the more competitive market they compete in and still maintain a lot of the same risk protection that conventional bank CDs have to offer. The downside to a brokered CD is the same that goes for bonds. You are left open to interest rate risk as we discussed earlier. Because a brokered CD is often used in a more short-term time horizon, we can minimize that risk. In addition to brokered CDs, I-bonds are another low-risk investment product via the U.S. Treasury, specifically designed to combat inflation, hence the name I-bond, that very few investors know much about, especially with the low inflationary environment we have been in the past. Here's how they work. You purchase a bond directly from the U.S. Treasury that has two interest rates, an initial fixed interest rate at the time of purchase that is set for the life of the bond, and then an adjusted inflation rate that is set twice a year and designed to match the consumer price index for all urban consumers per the U.S. Treasury. Right now, I-bonds are paying 7.12% annually, set to reprice in May of this year. All of that strong yield is due to the results of the high inflation rates we are currently seeing. I bet you're not going to find too many fixed income investment products yielding 7.12%. The plus side is that when inflation is high, these are great investments to keep up with inflation. The downside is that the current initial fixed rate of 0%, these I-bonds will never outpace inflation. There are also restrictions on the amount a taxpayer can purchase. It's about $10,000 each calendar year, and restrictions on hold periods, a minimum of 12 months, and you got to hold them for at least 5 years to avoid any interest giveback penalties, along with other details any investor should be aware of. Another positive to I-bonds, like other federal bonds, is that there is no state and local taxes on Treasury bond interest. For an investor that's looking to maintain inflation-matching returns and maintain minimal risk, I think these are a great option to consider. Although Keir Marbach does not specifically manage brokerage CDs or I-bonds, we would be more than happy to help walk through any questions you may have or help to see if these products would fit into your investment strategy. Feel free to reach out to anyone on the Keir Marbach client service team for more information. Outside of investment products, there is an investment allocation strategy that is designed to also help combat the idle cash issue. So before we dive into that, first and foremost, we want to keep in mind that you want to have a minimum of 1 year cash on hand for all unforeseen emergencies and 2 years cash on hand for all known cash needs, large expenses, i.e., buying a home, upcoming wedding, college, some of those types. Once those two are satisfied, for clients that have a stock and bond investment allocation, we can look to reduce the allocation specifically tied to bonds, in turn increase the allocation tied to stocks, and maintain that excess cash on hand. So for example, if a client has an investment allocation that is 70% stocks and 30% bonds, we would look to reduce the bond exposure by half to roughly 15%. The remaining bond exposure, we will obviously keep the duration short on those bond holdings. In turn, we would increase the stock exposure from 70% up to 80%. That would still leave excess cash on hand not allocated to stocks or bonds, with the purpose to balance market risk and provide cash income needs. So even though cash is still idle earning little yield return, we are able to offset a lack of yield by having a higher return exposure due to the increased allocation to the stock market. As the stock market outperforms, we will use the stock allocation to handle income needs or rebalance the cash. And if and when the stock market underperforms, we will use the cash allocation for income needs and an opportunity to rebalance and buy stocks at lower valuations. To take this one step further, as rates rise, we can use the excess cash on hand to reinvest back into bonds at future desirable yields and can look to rebalance to the original 70% stock, 30% bond allocation we originally set. This is just one example of how we can manage rising rates and high inflation by reallocating an investment strategy to increase stock exposure, lower bond exposure, and keep that excess cash on hand to manage the increased market risk. If I lost you along the way, caused you to have any questions, or want to explore this strategy for your own investment allocation, again, reach out to anyone on the Kira Marbach client service team to review in more detail. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen and hope that we've been able to help add clarity to your financial questions. We understand that in today's environment, information can be overwhelming, and our goal for this podcast is to break it down and simplify to how it affects you, the listener. If you have any questions or topics you wish covered, email me at zach@kirmar.com. That is zach@kirmar.com. And we would be more than happy to touch on that in future quarter shows. The only other update I have for clients is to be on the lookout for updated statements this quarter. I think you will see they look a little bit different than what's been in the past, but are much more user-friendly. If you have any trouble navigating your new statements, we have included a guide to help walk through the new format. But again, I will always offer, reach out to the client service team at Kira Marbach, and we'll be more than happy to help you out. Thanks and be well. Look forward to next show.